Welcome to Starfleet Arrest On-Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I have an SFB Online, Dead Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a moment, don't we have a talk cast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web, just go to the TalkShoe website at www.talkshoe.com, search for call ID 17702, or SFB On-Call, or Starfleet Venus On-Call. You should find us there. And of course, if you want the best online experience, you want to go to twitch.tv, twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. You'll be able to join us there and join the chat room and have a good time. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter /X, whatever they want to call it this week, you can find my podcast account at sfuoncall. Also, if you want to, you can follow my personal account, Paul Franz, of PaulFranz. There's no T in that. Also, there's my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGmes. Again, there's no T in that. And this quick, obviously, this talk gets turned a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Stephen Petrick has finally finished Orion the Master Starship book. They're actually still working on some images to add on and into the book. Also, when it comes to ACTA SF, Stephen is done book number 3. Al is currently working on laying out the pages for book 3. It's going to be a lot of work, and according to Steve Cole, it should take over a month to get that all done. Also, new product. Yes, that's what I said. I said a new product. We have Federation Commander Booster. New cards. Booster number 39 is now released. It's $19.95. It has the Romulan Light Command Cruiser, the Skyhawk L Destroyer Leader, the KFRL. Destroyer Leader, Battlehawk B Destroyer Leader, the Gorn Heavy Command Destroyer, and the Battle Destroyer Leader, and the ISC Destroyer Leader and Frigate Leader. Some excellent ships, which I will be ordering them shortly. Moving on one and forward, we've got, of course, found on the online store for this week is the Federation Commander Romulan Border. Now, make sure you're sitting down. This is $99.95. Unfortunately, costs are going up, and unfortunately, ADB has to raise their prices, especially for physical items like old counters. This cloak, Romans are raiding the Federation border, while the Gorns remain enigma. With the Dysonoroids become friends or enemies. Includes 6 mounted map panels, so they're cardboard map panels. Also, there's 40 full color 1-inch playing pieces. You know, those are nice, like metahex counters, and also 260 full color 1/2-inch game markers, and 16 laminated full double sided ship cards. So you have 16 different ships that you have included with this. Plus rules, dice, a marking pencil. I'm assuming it's like a China pencil, you know, grease pencil, and play aids. This product includes the complete and updated rules for the game system. So it also includes a rule book of the rules, which is kind of important if you're going to get this one. So yes, it's kind of expensive, but it has all kinds of physical goodies. Moving onward and forward, to when it comes to SFB Online tournaments, currently Sapphire Star 17 is not open yet. We're checking with Gene on that. Moving on forward to the library, actually, there's a couple fixes that Frank has sent me. I've not gotten around to upload them to the library, but you know, other than that, there's been no progress. Since last week, I did, as I mentioned last week, we did do quite a few ships. updates and some additions and so forth. And of course, FedCom also, it's currently nothing posted. I've got a note here which I need to check with Steve Cole, see if I can post the gunboats. I'm pretty sure at this point in time, it's been so long that we should be able to add the gunboats to the library. And with that is news for this week. It's me, the one and all public, welcoming you to Over the Universe on Call. And tonight, we got Doug. How you doing, Doug?
Hi, I am just getting over being sick, so sorry about my voice. Between that and the allergies week here. Blah. But otherwise, I'm here. Hi. Yay.
Hi. That's okay. Oh, you gotta be kidding me. No.
Try
There we
not to
go.
hack up a hairball during the thing.
That would be good. Because takes a little bit of work to actually get so I can mute. Okay.
Oh, I've got a mute button right here on this thing in my hand. I'm okay.
Okay,
If I think
good.
I'm going to make a totally disgusting thing, I'll make an editorial decision about whether I hit the button or not. You're on your own if I fail. Sorry.
That's fine.
But I'll try to save you the trouble.
What year? Oh yeah. Okay. Two things real quick. Actually, one thing real quick, which is there is a new product that I got released. It's a minor product release, which is basically another card pack for Federation Commander. Booster number 39. So this is good. We actually got some of them creating new cards, which is good. I'm gonna definitely place my order in for this booster pack. For those of you on the live, go back and listen to at least the news portion after the recording, because I've recorded for everybody else to listen to afterward about what's actually contained in the Federation Commander booster pack number 39, or go to obviously SAB's, sorry, ADB's online store, and they will have it there for you to purchase. Is 19.95, so that is good. Steve Petrick is doing good, and seems like things are starting to move forward with different products, including Book Three of the ACTA SF. I forget what that stands for. But so the things, it's good to see the products will be coming out, new products will be coming out, and that's always good to hear, because I know it's been a struggle in the past few years to get something out, something different, something new, and unfortunately for those older products, the only thing I found out today, which was I was announcing as part of the news section, with I do one little product for each week called Found on the Online Store. And this one was the Romulan Border for Federation Commander. And that was $99.95, which is not cheap for a game. But of course, the problem is all the cardboard is what it comes down to, because you have to do the printing and all that kind of things. And that's not cheap. So that's why things are getting a little expensive in that category from the original prices if you bought it many years ago. And of course, if you didn't think ADB would ever have to raise the prices, you're a fool. There, sorry. Now we're gonna move forward onto the topic for tonight, or topics for tonight. We're going to continue our moving along that road of SFB monsters. And this week, actually, I find it's interesting. It's called their spaceboard. The scenario is called Boar Hunt. And Real quick, I'm going to read the description of it. Space boars were a type of living monsters which was often found in the Western or Four Powers areas during the early years. The Zinese, Lyrians, and Carnivans hunted them most for sport, but once the carcass yielded, once killed, the carcass yielded important crystals and minerals that were of high value. Because of these crystals and minerals, the Klingons and Hydrans also hunted these creatures. Space boars were faster than ships of the early years. When the new ship clubs came available around Y-120, the animals were hunted down to extinction within a few years. So the scenario assumes, if you don't specify, a Y-100. So this is a scenario not designed for these super fast ships or drones. For example, an example of this is, all drones are slow. Big surprise. Speed 8, Type 2 or Type 5, that's speed 12, might be available for purchase as special drones depending on the year selected by the players. I think that's pretty much, I think it goes for all scenarios, but because normally that is the case. The drones are not included in the BPV, so that you have to upgrade them. But specifically, this scenario is mainly meant for years. In fact, it came from Cabin's Module Y1, i.e., the early years module. It's a single player monster, so they have automatic movement rules and attack. They have actions. The spaceborne moves at around speed 27, and don't mind me. Their movement is in a sense random, in that they go periodically make a decision where they're going to go, and then that direction for a period of time. Spacebar movement decisions are defined by a die roll. One, basically, it just goes boom. It just goes a straight line at speed 27. And this roll, just let you know, the roll is done twice a turn. So it's not doing it for the whole turn. It does it for like part of the turn. Now the impulses are 10 and 26. So it's not at the beginning. So anything that was happening on the previous turn just rolls in to the next turn, which obviously the good thing about that is that it will let you plan based on what you know the space boars are going to be doing for the first 10 impulses. And I'm just checking one thing. I hate that. Okay. I don't see anything. Because the question I had was, are these the space boars? Are they independent? In other words, you have to roll a die for each space boar. Now, in this scenario, it is a single space boar. So that answers that question.
Well, if you added a second one, you don't.
Was that again? I'm sorry.
I'm just guessing that.
Okay.
The only thing is, space boars move at a speed of blah, blah, blah. Their movement is, in a sense, random. I would say probably. It doesn't seem to say you must move them as a unit if there's more than one.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, basically, if they moved as a herd, I kind of think.
Oh, yeah, I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, if you roll a die two, it moves slower, 16, but turns to the left every two hexes. So it's like turning around in the circles. Yeah. What? Sorry. Roll a die of three. Select one ship in the FAR. Roll a die to pick between possible candidates and attack it. What that means is that it's going to pursue that ship as a seeking weapon at speed 27 with a turn mode of 2. With the ship's hex, it attacks. And the 4 to 6 is the same as a previous decision. So that in the case of if you're going straight line, i.e. roll, die, roll 1, the next die roll is 4 to 6. Again, straight line for speed 27. What? Sorry. Say hello. Hello. It's a goodie.
Hello. Oh, I okay. Meant
goodbye.
Sorry.
Oh, where in the heck? Oh, I don't know.
Where were you saying that it said about using more than one? Oh, use variation, use two or more. Okay, I see that.
Yeah. And the attacks, the space war attack using two anti-matter tusks simultaneously. Roll one die for each tusk, so you do two die rolls. I roll 1 to 4. The tusk strikes the ship and causes 1 to 12 points of damage, total of the two dice. Treat this damage as drone hit. After each attack, roll again on the table to see what the space board decides to do next. The space boards could, in theory, attack as many 32 times in one turn. That'd be bad.
Yeah, they can get nasty quick.
Yeah. And the space boards are killed by general damage. For an average adult space board, the total damage required to kill it is 200 points. So it's not that hard to kill compared to some of all the monsters we've been dealing with. This is an easy one. For proper
realism, it attacks you 10 times in a row. If it attacks you 10 times in a row on the same shield, it might not be so easy.
Nope. Agreed. Oh, agreed there. For proper realism, roll a 6-eye die and add the total to 1-eye 2 in order to determine the number of points required to kill the space boar. In other words, there's a slight variance.
It's supposed to be dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, agreed.
Sometimes reading these scenarios, I wonder if they really wanted to just create a fantasy role-playing game and say, by the way, you're going to die today. Enjoy.
Oh, yeah. Some of those monsters are nasty. Okay. Ba-ba-ba. If no ship is within 25 hexes of a spaceport, the spaceport disengages. If there's no other spaceport in the scenario, alive or dead, the scenario is over. In the multiplayer variant, the 200 players may continue the scenario as long as they wish, attacking each other. This would be interesting. The carcass of a slain spaceport is a valuable commodity worth 250 points. For its capture in a multiplayer scenario, actually, the number of victim points is equal to the number of damage required to kill the monster. It cannot be destroyed by further damage and has a total cost equal to 5% of the original damage points, which were required to kill it. Okay. That's always tough. Okay, so multiplayer. Yes, we're 200. I'm looking at the multiplayer, all the victory standard victory conditions. The space border is worth 200 victory points. That's always interesting when you have a multiplayer and who does like the death blow versus someone who just did a little ding ding ding.
Well, it's whoever has it at the end.
Right. This
whoever has possession. Yeah. Thank you for unloading your entire alpha into it. Nice ship you had there, mister.
Big surprise. Tactics are closing an attack. Trying to get close enough right after Spaceborne makes his decision to be further away by the time he makes the next one. Okay, I was reading the designer notes. I might as well read it because I forgot the podcast. I want the designer notes. I'm assuming it was Steve? Who's the designer? Oh, Steve Roosevelt. One of the scenarios was unique to the early years. The key elements of it were time period of low speed and low output. So obvious solution was a monster fast enough to get away from the EY ship, but slow enough to be exterminated by later ships. Which makes sense. It's like Kimber and size and LMC's ships. You know, the whole idea of the LMC ships were that you have a ship that can fight each other and put up a fight, but has to be weak enough so that the Andromedans can defeat them. That was kind of a basic part of that. I didn't know. Huh. Nick Black and Annie Palmer. Actually, that doesn't surprise me that they were playtesters. Because I know Annie Palmer was really into the early years.
Yes.
I didn't know this. Les LeBlanc and Carl Magnus Carlson. Wow.
Oh, a lot of us love the early years stuff when it came out.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Annie Palmer
Strain,
is.
I think Strain playtested some of it too. Even if not credited. Is he credited?
Yeah. Okay, let me look at the next one, which is actually on to the, where is it? Ooh, okay. This is a little nastier. I don't think my family would appreciate this so much because they're not really into spiders. The space spider! Your cruiser is sent to a remote area in response to a disaster beacon from a freighter trapped in some unusual kind of web. Moving to the rescue, the freighter crew calls for help, saying that a space spider has trapped their ship and surrounded it by a web. The space spider returns periodically to rip open the hull and devour a member of the crew. They must be yummy. Okay. The scenario is assumed to 175, so it has regular ships. And the spider sets up second after the fleet cruiser in any weapon hex, in any web hex, initially facing it at the player's option. So it's a two-player game, a fleet player and a spider player. Da-da-da. And oh, the spider web. Okay, that's what the terrain is. Which is the innermost hex is, of course, the middle of the map. And then we have the next innermost hexes, which is surrounded, looks like. Strength 12, and same for the middle and outermost. So there's three layers of web. There it is. As far as the intelligent monster, i.e. player operated, movement of the spider can move up to speed 16. It must select the speed it will move during energy allocation, announce this speed in speed determination phase. A space spider can use plotted midterm pages, but cannot use unplotted midterm pages, speed changes.
But look how fast he can move because of the web thing.
Spider moves directly from one existing hex to another existing web hex. It can, at its own discretion on that impulse, move on to another existing connected adjacent web. It can move two hexes per movement pulse when moving from hex to connected web hex. It is regardless of the current announced speed, as long as that speed is greater than zero. Note that the movement along the connected web gives the spider spider a nominal speed of 32 on such impulses. Okay, the space spider movement is treated super fast.
Oh, I like that nasty, that when the spider can attack, and it can only attack when it's in the same hex as a ship, it can choose which shield it's going to hit, regardless of facing.
The space can only attack ships by entering the hex of the ship, and by having a ship enter, or by having a ship enter attack. In either case, both ship and space spider must be in the same hex at the end of the voluntary movement segment. Da-da-da. Yeah, as Doug was just pointing out, you can pick any shield legs, irrespective of the target's ship facing and the direction in which they enter the target's ship hex, to receive full effect of its attack. This is also irrespective of the relative facing of each ship within the hex, if more than one ship is present. Yikes. Well, if more than one ship is ignited in the hex, the spider enters in the hex with a given impulse, it can attack each ship in the hex. The direction from which the space spider enters the hex of the ship and determines which weapon the ships can fire at the space spider. Ooh. So you're limited by what you can fire at the space spider, but the space spider can attack any shield it wants. And the space spider attacks and scores 12 points of damage. The damage operates against the shield normally, with any points penetrating the shield scored normally as additional damage on the target. Blah, 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 whatever. The space spider can attack any number of times during a given turn, but can only attack a given ship once per impulse, only if it enters the ship hex or ship enters the hex. The space spider can attack any other unit rather than the ship, providing that it's entered the hex of that object. Note that the sneaking weapon target on the space spider will hit the spider, score its own damage before it's destroyed. Unit includes mines, even though mine is inactive. Note that it disables mines will not trigger as a result of being destroyed by a space spider. Right, the web blade operates as a falling web, except it's modified as follows. Space spider can lay a web in any hex it enters at its sole discretion. Doesn't require any power. Web blade in that space spider is strength 12, unless the hex already has a web in it, in which case the existing web is increased by 6 points in strength. Okay, laying web is always at the option of the space spider and can lay web. In each hex, it enters the given impulse. Note, the space spider can only lay web in non-Tholian web hexes. It cannot lay a web in a Tholian web hex. Okay. That's interesting. For person movement, a non-web hex that it enters and then lays web is not considered to have been connected to the web hex along an additional hex of movement. Okay. And the space spider web does not require anchor points. That's the space spider. But always considered to be anchored to subspace field the spider can access. Space spider web can lay adjacent to other spider web hexes. Note, however, the space spider web cannot be laid adjacent to a Tholian web or vice versa. Any ship can fire phasers into it, out of it, or through space spider web as if it's a Tholian ship. All other weapons are blocked by the space spider as if it were a Tholian web. Okay.
Just reading the lore part of this.
Uh-huh.
It about how it's like something that might be from a subspace dimension and this, that, and the other. It just gave me this mental picture of Forbidden Planet and thinking, what if this thing is just something from something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The id monster? Yeah. That was just a random thought. Like, it could be like a relic of the old kings that abandoned the whole place. So, though not necessarily an id monster, but
wow,
something on that level above the tech of the the worms that rose up with warp power afterwards. There you go. But yeah, like there's like a whole bunch more to that beyond the scenario.
Okay.
Because for all the commonality of it, you know, now here's just a random thought. It's like, mm-hmm. for all the commonality of this monster, it makes you wonder if you could add a whole different layer to like a Federation and Empire campaign game where they're playing like the whole general war out. If you had like random monster encounters thrown into it that their ships have to deal with one way or the other, like they have to send somebody off to deal with it, you know, or their ship gets crippled. Do all the cripples make it home, or do any of them have to deal with this kind of scenario? So, it's a random thought.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
It could be applied to a lot of the monsters in that you've been reading. Hi there, Omaha. Did you hear the other kitty through my headphones? I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
So there's that.
What?
Oh, by the way. I not plugging it. It's just random thought. Remember we were talking about Dwarf Fortress as an inspiration for something else a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
In a random conversation. There was a video I saw today, and I'm not going to drag politics into this.
Okay.
But there was a guy who had a YouTube video where he basically said, okay, I'm going to take the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party's policies, and I'm going to play Dwarf Fortress using the policies and see how it goes. It did not go well.
Understood.
So, I thought that was kind of funny. I just wanted to throw that out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
You can look it up if you want to.
Oh, understood.
Dwarf Fortress, Oh God, what was it? I forget the name of the channel. If I remember, I'll text it to you later.
Okay.
But it was, what? Go ahead.
Yeah, it just brings up the point of when it comes to games in general, and that is each game is an engine, and I'm geez, if you ever listen to Three Games, Three Moves Ahead, they talk about, oh, they love, basically ends up being a simulation of history. And the idea that you can play out what would happen if, in the case of, let's say, the Germany won the World War II, or not necessarily that, but different ways of running a country, things like that. And because they really love that. But the obviously the problem with any of that is usually the model. And how close the model is to reality, and how it simulates these things and their interactions, which is always a difficult thing to truly know how the pieces all fit together when it comes to socioeconomic pressures versus governmental rule, what kind of government you have, what kind of policies are put in place by that government, and how that all works out to either happy people and but also a more vibrant country, or how that whole thing actually works. But any gamer basically is creating a model of a simulation of what he thinks the interactions are.
Oh yeah, and it's like if you've read up on your World War II history, you can come out with two different conclusions. One is that it was a very close thing in some respects at some points, and others that it might not have mattered if those close points were different, and others that it was a foregone conclusion pretty much no matter what. And one of the interesting things about this is that those opinions can change over time with the more you learn, or the different lens that you look through the thing with, because it's the reason a lot of experts are wrong about things when they have like the talking head moments about topic whatever, and you've got this big consensus that fits a narrative, and it seems like this is the way things are going to be, and then the whole thing falls apart and it doesn't turn out anything like what all the experts were saying. Well, the problem is that there's always not always, but almost always something that's an unknown factor, an unknown effect that like comes out later on. Well, this is why it was seen. Here's the real reason it was a foregone conclusion this other way. While all the experts were saying it was going to go direction A, and it actually turned out to be direction B. So,
Yeah. Oh, what's
why
that?
was, right before the second Gulf, big Gulf War, back in the 90s, Operation Desert Shield turning into Desert Storm. It's like there was predictions that it would be this the biggest bloodbath in American history right before the whole thing kicked off, and it ended up being an operation where I won't say that we lost more people in training exercises, but it was pretty darn close for, its scale and what was expected. I mean, it went very well, but the experts were claiming that it would go totally horribly. And you could say maybe you could try and cover and say maybe they were just trying to prep the public for horrible losses. But there were a lot of unknown factors on the other side that caused a severe collapse there. Or like the Ukrainian position, why all the experts were saying Ukraine would fall within weeks, and then within a year, and then the next 6 months, and so forth. And it's like, some of us veterans were talking about it particularly our recently passed friend, who are, you know, if they're, convinced one way or the other, we came to a conclusion that the biggest problem for the Russians was corruption. They were living with what we called the 1970s motor pool mindset, because those of us who were in the early to mid 80s, and Mike and I were both in during that time frame, as well as in the 90s, when I actually met Mike the first time, there was this period where you basically didn't have the funds to go do anything other than keep your stuff decently looking in the motor pool, but it wasn't really combat ready necessarily. And the difference between us and the Russian army was that we were honest about it, used that to try to get more money out of our politicians. But the Russians basically would lie all up and down the chain of command, saying everything's fine, everything's peachy keen, so they could keep the status quo and nobody gets fired, nobody gets hurt, and they fuel selling off their parts. So, did I like pick out there for a second?
Just for a moment. Oh. But I didn't hear you. I didn't hear your drop. That's the weird part.
Yeah, I accidentally, the cat was moving around here, and I accidentally hit the mic button on the handheld. But it's like, there's the unknown factor. There's the big unknown factor that a lot of the, quote, experts had no clue about. And it took them like 2 years to figure out that, oh yeah, maybe the corruption part, when they're like, their tires are literally rotting off of their vehicles, had something to do with them not being able to have a good convoy. I'm just saying.
No, I understand. Yeah, you think about the whole issue with getting out of Afghanistan. It shows the whole issue of corruption within that part of the world. Because I'm willing to bet part of the issue with the Iraqis is the same issue. You know, they didn't have a lot of people that really are worth a fight for life, you know, for the country, you know.
Well, the thing is, in a lot of parts there, you're talking about very family-oriented tribal politics.
Right.
Even though they have, quote, nations, you're still, like, you're more loyal to your neighborhood than you are to, like, the guy over in charge in Baghdad.
Right.
You know. And all politics everywhere is local. Every society has a level of corruption to it. But a lot of the second and third world nation setups haven't really completely worked through corruption as part of the job to being corruption is bad and should be, like, kicked out.
Right.
You know. And it really is nothing new. This is like the way of the world. Like, when, and it stems from pre-modern economics, where if you were tax collector X, yeah, you went out and collected taxes for a living, but you got to keep a good chunk of it. So the more you collected, the more you got to keep, you know. Or you got your notary stamp, but you're not being paid by the government to use it. You're just authorized to use it, so you're going to get paid by the guys that want you to use your stamp. Now, that's not necessarily corruption, but that is how these different jobs are viewed.
Right.
You know, like, it's just a whole different world outside of, you know, this what we are used to dealing with. You know, we don't expect to go to 7-Eleven and haggle over the price of a Slurpee, you know. other parts of the world, you are expected to haggle over the price of your damn Slurpee. So, there's that. It's just, most of it's cultural. But like I was saying, I'm surprised that they don't have, like, a module. And I wouldn't actually be totally surprised if you told me that they did, and I just missed it, that takes the monsters into, like, F&E or something like that. Which I think would be interesting.
Agreed.
Not that game needs to be made any more bloated or longer.
Oh, I agree there. Well,
complex in play, simple though the game system itself is. Which is one thing I really do admire about it.
So. Agreed. Yeah, I think one thing that being good for when it comes to monsters might be for the smaller campaign instead of the normal, you know, the general war. But you know, if you have a smaller campaign with limited space, limited place in the SFU universe, that could be a nice option to add to that kind of mini campaign, the mini game kind of thing. But getting back to the space spider, the interesting part of it is, of course, the space spiders are not a ship. They can't be tractored. Not a good. They're size guys too, but they're nimble. Also, the spiders don't have MCs, which makes things interesting.
No, but they have the webs.
Right. And they're unaffected by all forms of EW, to include cloaking devices. So, if you have a cloaking device, it's a waste of time to power it. But there's nothing that would be worse off if you try to power it, because it has no effect, and you're just wasting power. And those cloaking devices are not cheap. What was that, Doug?
It's a size class 2 target. Yeah. And by the way, just to make it even more fun, if your ship gets horribly, horribly beaten down, you cannot escape by sublight.
Ooh.
Yeah. You're just toast at that point.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because of the spider.
Or you're the subject of the next scenario, hopefully.
Yep.
As it slowly eats your crew.
One at a time. Yeah, the see here, the freighter, in this scenario, both warp and impulse are inactive. They have no power. As they see, strain them to failure, and they feel the effort to escape the web. But they can still be damaged, so they're still internals. Also, the shields of the freighter are inactive. It cannot be restored during the scenario. Oh, geez.
Yeah.
While the APR and battery are available for power, allowing the ship to fire its phasers and operate fire control, the ship is otherwise considered to be emergency life support. The ship can access zero turn energy turns, but has no other capability to maneuver during the scenario. The shuttle is available and will operate normally. Wow. But I have to double check the rules, which is, can a shuttle be launched out of a web? Or is it, as soon as you launch, is it snared by the web?
It's snared immediately.
Okay.
However, you still have the normal movement stuff with all the web strength to it.
Right.
So if you have a very low strength web, you just start applying your movement points to it until you can escape.
That's one thing I did not check.
If you have a really high strength web, well, you're kind of stuck there. And your seeking weapon shuttle becomes a mine that hopefully the spider will step onto.
Understood.
But one thing about the web, though, is that it's like a lower grade version of the Tholian web. On the plus side, even though all other weapons are blocked by it, you can shoot out of it, and you can shoot phasers through it, even if you're not a Tholian.
Right.
So it's one little shining silver lining to the whole thing there.
Agreed. Yeah, because it says
Which
you can fire phasers in or out of it or through the space spider web as if you were flying a ship.
Right before it eats you.
Yeah. Yeah. Da, da, da. I don't see anything.
What are you looking for?
That is web losing power, losing strength. I think I might have to look at the G10 rules, because it said that it acts as of only a web, except for the modified below.
Okay.
Right. No, this means the space spider web is subject to deterioration, G10.4, and each individual hex of the space spider web must be individually tracked for this. Okay. Because the spider can come to individual web hexes and strengthen it by six. And it starts with this one spider, right? Okay, a spider. Okay. And where's the freighter? Well, the freighter is in the innermost hex, which is
Yeah,
strength
it does
30.
deteriorate. Oh, so their webs, you don't lay it out in one big chunk. It's per web hex laid each time you lay it. Okay.
Yep. And the web, it doesn't require an anchor point like the Tholian webs. You can just lay whatever. Okay, the space spider is destroyed by accumulating 240 points of damage. It's fully operational until the final point of the damage is scored. And the space spider has no stealth repair capability during the scenario, but unless otherwise defined by the special scenario companion rules, will automatically repair all damage between scenarios.
And it doesn't like Tholian web at all. Incompatible and cannot be laid in or with or next to it.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That gives the Tholians a significant advantage in curtailing the thing's movement.
Agreed. It limits where it can lay webs.
Tholian webs have no effect on space spiders. They do not impair the movement or block its attacks. Okay. Space spider webs affect Tholians as if they were non-Tholian units encountering Tholian web. Oh, that's nice. But they do prevent them from doing the, from laying in that hex though, so. Or laying web next to it, either or. Oh, envelopers cannot envelop. Hellbores can only be fired in direct fire against it. Some limitations there.
Okay, let's see. Where do you see that?
It's further down.
Okay.
Page 79. They put a lot into this for something that I don't recall ever playing, not even once in 30 something years.
Yeah, well, this is catalog number 50.
Oh, okay. What year was that?
2015.
Yeah, it's right there next to it. It's, yeah. Wow. Okay. So that's 9 years that that's been around.
Yep. Yeah, that was yeah, that was after we stopped going to Origins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. To kill a space spider. Yeah, for space spider and the tactics. Your webs are an important part of your operation. You cannot keep them at all at strength, but look at the opportunities to enmesh the cruiser within them, and then run over him again and again until he's destroyed. Remember that you can lay a strength 12 web hex anytime you wish, and strengthen any hex by 6 points by entering it again. Once you have damaged the ship's engines sufficiently, lay a web of enough strength they cannot leave the hex, attack him again and again until he is no more. Oh yeah, definitely very nice. And doo-doo-doo. The good thing about and one thing that they did not mention, which I think people who play the spider have to remember, which is da 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 da. Where is it? I think it was here. In here. Oh yeah, this is here. It is, right here. I can't select it. Okay, doesn't matter. Okay, basically, that the space spider can move more quickly when moving from web hex to web hex. So that's also a benefit when it comes outside the little four ring, well, three ring, web hex is around 2215. So it's good for repositioning where the spider is really quickly versus, you know, his speed was only speed 16. Also, because he can lay a web hex anytime he wants, because I don't see a limitation on it at all. So it means if he's just moving from hex to hex, he can put a web hex down. And if he can do that, he can put up a lot of barriers to, you know, the ship, the fleet opponent. But also, you can use those web hexes to move faster outside
Yeah.
of, you know, the center of the map.
Yeah, you can make big circles and just move from one part of it to another. And here's the fun part for you, is once it goes to the end that's like degrading, as soon as it degrades, you can just start building it up again in another direction.
Yeah, but all you have to do is visit the web hex and you strengthen it by six.
Oh, there you go then.
Yeah, because it doesn't say anything
He
like,
could just
oh.
run around like rebuilding his web. Oh, that's so cute. That has, they should do like the oh good Lord, the one Futurama episode with the spiders where they had the cute spiders running around there as it tears your ship to bits.
Oh, geez.
But then it has the little cute anime spider look to it.
Attack! Okay, I think with that we're gonna wrap up for the evening. Doug, it's always a pleasure to have you around. Thank you for stopping by. Anything you want
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, Gamers of Summer coming up. I sure could use a schedule from somebody who wants to run Starfleet Battle stuff.
I'm not sure who he's talking about.
Exactly. Get your damn schedule in.
Will do.
Come on. Please, just text me something.
Okay, well, I will do. I promise this weekend you will get it.
There were some good monster scenarios earlier on that you could run.
Oh yeah. I plan on making a monster tournament of sorts. You know, make it easy for some people that want to walk up, just play, or you know, have it as a quote unquote tournament. People can play it as a demo. And be considered as part of the tournament if they, you know, they can win something.
I wouldn't even worry about a tournament setup at this point.
Right.
Because all the years we've been trying to get a tournament going, and it's like we just aren't getting the people coming out looking to do that kind of play.
Understood.
We're lucky to get people to ask for a demo.
Right.
I would love it if a group of guys came up, like the Schenectady group, and said, hey, you know, there's 10 of us, and we want to run, you know, Tholian wedding cake scenario this weekend. Or we're going to do campaign version of the Lone Gray Wolf. See, have different people playing it from different perspectives and see who comes. But, yeah, whatever, something. But, you know, literally haven't seen those guys. Oh, and that's coming up soon if anybody wants to go. It's in July yet. They did do a RSVP if you're on their mailing list. Double check your emails.
Yep.
Because they did do RSVP for people to get their numbers of what they're going to have to have space for and everything. So, looks like it'll be a lot of fun.
I'm sure it'll definitely be a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make it because it collides with another thing that happens exactly the same time. It sucks.
Yeah, well, for me, it's mostly been either a economics issue or it's been a family issue.
Mm-hmm.
I've just never gotten to go up there, and it's... You know, technically probably about the same distance and time and effort of getting there as it would be for going to Origins. But
it's a little closer, but yeah, when it comes to the amount of time and effort, yeah, the same.
Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, Columbus is pretty much a straight shot by highway.
Mm-hmm.
The whole way is highway. But getting up to there, that's going to be a mix. So, anyway, yeah, thank you for having me on. If you want to come up sometime and work on some technical issues for the podcast and stuff, you know where I'm at. So, there you go.
Understood. Annoying, but anyhow, had a nice little discussion of some monsters, actually early year monsters, which are kind of interesting in that again, it's one of those monsters for a particular kind of scenario, a particular setup that's a little different than the normal monsters where, okay, whatever you want, you can go attack the monster with it. The space boars are a little different in that the if you go to the later years, basically you can kill the space boar easily with any cruiser out there and defeat it. You know, give it enough fast drones and or plasma, it'll be dead real quick. And that's why I think the reason why they only survived in the Lyrian, the Zinni, Carnivans area, if it would have been the other side of the galaxy or the Octan, then they wouldn't have a chance. So, anyway, with that, I am Paul Fran, and I bid you a good night.